Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show.
Is it possible to love your lawyer? First time I became familiar with today's guest was through my wife. She was raving about her business attorney and said, "I love those guys." I thought she was on something, but then I met today's guest and she was right. Sam Mazzio, welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Thanks for having me.
Sam is the founding and managing partner of Better APC, a new approach and focus on education empowerment for his clients and the communities they love. They're not just legal support, but they're human support. Sam is also a B Corp, and he's on the board of Business for Good, along with a couple other things that he's involved with. So he's a very, very, very busy guy. So with all that, we'll dig into this and get the whole Sam story, what you're doing, why you're doing it. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
I remember last time you and I were talking, I think you were leaving to go on your annual ski trip with your dad. I don't see any casts. You didn't limp through the door, so apparently it all went well. Any good stories to share?
It went quite well, and this is actually a new addition from that trip.
Oh, he's showing us a tattoo.
Yep.
So did dad get one too?
He did. He got it on his left arm. I have it on my right arm, and it is a silhouette of the two of us on the ski lift.
Wow, how nice is that?
It's pretty cool. He was the one insisting on it. I'd already gotten a few tattoos this year, and I was kind of over the pain at the moment, and he was pretty insistent, so we emailed one of the tattoos. Two shops in town, and they got us in on our last day, and we love it.
Wow, that's amazing. So you guys have been doing this ski trip. Is this something you've been doing for many years? Or
yeah, probably 10, 15 years, something like that, and he's pushing 70, so every year it's a question of how much can he do, and he's
70's young these days.
Well, and he hangs with me. I gotta wait a little bit, but that's also true when I go with my brother. So yeah, he's still doing it, and we have a great time, and we went to Whistler this year, and it's probably both of our favorite mountains because it's just there's so much space to cover and so many runs, and we got lucky. They had no snow all year, and then they got dumped on the week before we got there, and then it was sunny and beautiful while we were there.
Living right, Sam.
Yep, it was great.
Well, let's talk about what you do. Obviously, you must have a little different approach to law than the average law firm out there. Otherwise, my wife wouldn't love you.
Yeah, we try to do it a little bit different. I think sometimes people think we're doing it that way just to be the anti-lawyer, and I think that that's not what I would say is the driving force. When I first started my first law firm where we worked with your wife, we just questioned all of the normal practices and processes that attorneys use and said, why do they do it that way? Why is it done like that? And some of them, you know, they bear out. They're done that way for a reason. But
it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, but a lot of them don't. You know, the way that attorneys bill every 7/10 of a minute, that's just to line their pockets. And billing for every communication prevents people from reaching out and keeping you up to date on what they're doing, and then you can't help as effectively. And so a lot of those types of things, retainers are not something that we do, and a lot of those are really designed to make it a lot more low impact and a lot more approachable. And so we try to, you know, it's not as, I guess, relevant nowadays. I like to say we try to leverage technology, but after the pandemic, you know, everyone's on Zoom and using things like that more. But we try to do that. We try to leverage as many platforms and processes to keep our costs down, make it efficient. We don't want to be that lawyer that delays everyone's projects and what they're working on and costs $1 million and corner office, three-piece suit bullshit. That's not us. And so we don't subscribe to that. You have a work life and you have a personal life. It's all one person. It's all one life. And so, you know, you had said human support. And yeah, truly, we are there for our clients beyond just providing legal support if something's going on. You know, when we have interns, if we see that they're struggling, and we have a Monday mindfulness check-in with them so that we can kind of get an idea of where they're at. And if they're struggling for any reason, whether it's because they're overwhelmed with school or the work we're giving them or something in their personal life, you know, we encourage them to take a day, take a personal day or a week, whatever they need, because you being well is going to be much more important than you being at work. And if you're at work and you're not well, you're not going to do well. So it is very much as holistic as we can be, I guess I would say.
I love that. I know part of my wife's comments back in the day were had to do with it being fun. Like,
yeah.
You know, just how your communications and things, like, you know, most law firms, this is all very serious, right? Very
right.
Serious business. We're trying to keep you out of jail. But you guys made it fun.
Yeah, we send a lot of gifts, and we've got, you know, a lot of questionnaires that people fill out, and those have gifts and videos and things in there, and we try to add some levity to the process because it can be very serious, and luckily we get to help people, for the most part, kind of proactively to set up their nonprofit or their business or protect their intellectual property, you know, help them with hiring and firing and performance management. And so being proactive in that way and setting people up rather than being in the situation where they have to sue someone or it's reactive is a lot better place to be. And, you know, I use better because we're called better, but not because we think we're better than any other law firm, but because we want to be better every day and help our clients be better every day.
Love that. So maybe talk a little bit about who's your typical clientele, and you just mentioned a little bit what you do for them. So maybe share a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably a third of our clientele are going to be nonprofit organizations, and that's setting up the nonprofit or existing nonprofits that come in to kind of tighten things up or have us help with any of those things that I mentioned. And then we'll have usually another third is going to be just kind of small, medium-sized businesses of any variety. So other B Corps, other 1% for the planet businesses, social enterprises, normal just small and medium-sized businesses that maybe don't have the social impact aspect of them, probably less of those. And then I'd say the other third is going to be solo entrepreneurs, creatives, artists, freelancers. And then we help them with all the things. So contracts, trademark, copyright, setting up the business, like I said, all the employment materials, and pretty much anything else that they would need in that kind of general business law practice. If they need litigation or if they need something very specialized, we'll probably have a good referral for that. We spent a lot of time kind of developing that Rolodex, so to speak. And then we also started doing trusts and estates, so wills and trusts and that type of materials for our clients, just because we've had all these clients that, you know, we help them set up their business and then they get married and they have a kid and their business is doing well and they need to protect it. And we were referring all that out, and then they don't get that experience that they get with us. And so now we have developed some of those questionnaires and some of that process that can still be a little bit fun, even though you're dealing with something mildly morbid.
Right. Love it. So if I'm a business person and kind of in the group that you're working with and maybe some of the earlier stage kinds of folks, what should they be thinking about? What's top of mind? What are the mistakes you see people make on the legal side?
Yeah, honestly, putting it off is a big mistake that people
procrastination.
Make. Procrastination.
That's a kind of a problem across many things.
Yeah, really. That's a human problem. But I would say, yeah, people are very, you know, put off by the legal profession and are scared of lawyers. I just spent some time at the B Corp conference in Vancouver with one of our clients' employees. And that conference is just a great opportunity to connect with people. And so we've become good friends. But she specifically told me that she had been intimidated by me. And so I think it is something.
Well, you are kind of scary.
I don't know about that.
Maybe it's the beard.
With my People Over Profit shirt on over here. But I think, yeah, it's an intimidation that is just sort of from the stigma of lawyers, and for good reason too. Like you had said, it can be very serious. It can be very scary. A lot of lawyers' tactics are to scare people into using their services, and then they cost a ton of money. And so I think people putting off the legal is one of the big mistakes we see. And then also having this expectation that you have to do all of it. Because what we try to help our clients with is like, take it one piece at a time. You don't have to have every single risk mitigation thing in place at the same moment. And in fact, you probably can't, because some depend on others and depend on your circumstances. And so doing things one step at a time and just trying to chunk away at making sure you're protected is going to be the best way to do that. And you don't have to go it alone. A lot of people, another mistake I guess I would say is people that use AI now, but just the internet to create contracts or do these certain things. And then they come to us and they're like, yeah, I screwed this up. And we're not there to say, I told you so. We're there to help fix it. But that is a real thing. You know, we get Franken contracts all the time that are a mess and we have to kind of help them. Or sometimes it is reactive. They come to us after they're in trouble because of that contract or something along those lines.
I'm guilty.
A lot of people are.
I try to do my own trademark for jailbreak leadership and then the government said no.
Yeah, trademark is one of those ones too that is very nuanced. I say it's my most intellectually stimulating but also most frustrating area that I practice.
Yeah, so I went and got myself an attorney.
There you go.
Straightened it out for me. I got my trademark. But
good.
Yeah, I failed. There's a reason I'm not an attorney. Why are you an attorney?
Well, you learned. You didn't fail. You learned.
There you go.
That's what
Next
it was.
Time, don't be doing that, Jeff. So why are you an attorney? Why did you go down this path?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you the real story. It's not inspirational or, you know, some people are third generation lawyer in their family, and I'm not one of those. And it wasn't, you know, to be honest, something that grew out of this intense desire to help people. It was, I wanted to be a sports agent. And that was because I was in sports in high school and was not, you know, I'm 5'9 on a good day. So I was not gifted to be a college athlete. And so I decided at some point early on in college, probably after I tried to walk onto the track team and got obliterated on the walk-ons, but I just wanted to be involved with sports. And so started going down the path, did pre-law, was a psychology major in college, which I find to be super helpful in the work that I do and just with people, but ended up in law school pursuing the sports agent kind of route. And it just quickly became clear that that was during the period of time, I don't know if it has gone away, but where athletes were getting in a lot of trouble for domestic violence and just different crimes. And I kind of made the decision, I don't want to be receiving phone calls at 2 a.m. from my clients for things like that and trying to cover it up or whatever goes on in those industries, and didn't want to interact with other sports agents either. And so then it became, you know, one of probably many soul searching periods of my life, and ended up at a corporate law firm that I hated, actually, and was very sort of sketchy, to be honest. And so that really kind of changed my trajectory completely and ended up putting me in the nonprofit world. And so if you asked me back then to be a sports agent, then probably to make money. If you ask me now, it is to help people. And it is because I feel that I can apply creativity that I don't have in traditional art endeavors to how I practice the law to be better for people.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
The evolution of how you get to where you are today.
Yeah, it's a good one. I feel like it highlights a lot of things that we all struggle with personally. And I was really honored to speak at Creative Mornings last year and kind of tell that story of sort of my trajectory and how, you know, I was one of those sketchy lawyer guys back in the day, and learned from observing that law firm that I was at how much I didn't want to be that in my life.
It's kind of funny. I got caught up watching this show. It's on Netflix. It was probably somewhere else, but Ballers.
Oh, I remember that.
With The Rock.
Yeah.
And it's about sports and agents and all this good stuff. And it's like everything you just described is pretty much the whole show.
Exactly.
You get these multi-million athletes just doing all these really insane things.
And then having
and The Rock's trying to save them.
Yep. Damage control. Yep. No thanks.
Well, he's creating his own havoc in the world.
Exactly.
It's a good series. I recommend it.
Yeah. I liked it. It was good.
Yeah. It's fun stuff. Well, speaking of this whole thing, I mean, you have a lot of things going on. So part of your business model is you're a B Corp. And So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, one, just again, kind of, we talk about this a fair amount, but what is a B Corp versus like a benefit corporation? You just came from the big conference. Maybe a little insight there. So, yeah, give us the story. Why are you doing it? What's the value?
Sure.
What's the downside? Why you shouldn't do it?
Yeah, I'll give a little plug for 1% for the Planet on the front end, because we're considered a B1 because we're a B Corp and a 1% for the Planet.
Wow.
And 1% of the Planet's just simple. You donate 1% of your revenue to environmental causes, which we really like, because then we can identify nonprofits in town and donate to them and split up our donation and make those relationships. And
that's new to me.
Oh, it is. Yeah. So
I am not familiar with that. So.
They're having a big summit here in San Diego in October, actually. Oh. And I was at their summit in New York in October of last year. And it's a very similar community, I would say, to the B Corp community. And so B Corp, yeah, there's benefit corporations, which are the actual state entity that you can get just like a normal corporation.
Legal entity. Yeah.
Yep, totally. Just like an LLC, anything like that. And you're not actually required to be a benefit corporation to be a certified B Corp. And so the certification is really this B Corp that we talk about, and like the conference that I was at, that's all the certified B Corps. And that's done through B Lab, which is a global nonprofit organization that has I believe it's like 200 questions now, an assessment that you have to go through. And so it touches.
Very rigorous, as I understand it.
Absolutely. And depending on what your business is, it can be very, very rigorous, because it checks on things like your waste, your facilities, your lights, LED, you know, what does your ownership look like? Is it diverse? What is your downstream impact with your clientele and your customers? And then it's very comprehensive. And I actually tell people, if they ever plan to become a B Corp, you can't be for your first year. They want to have you be around for a little while before you take the assessment. But you can go through and take that assessment even though you're not doing the certification.
I think it's online, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, it's all interactive. And that allows you to kind of get a roadmap for how you can be better. And so I think we have to recertify this year, actually, and it's going to be interesting because it's been a few years and they've changed a few things. And
they raised the bar, too.
They raised the bar. They've changed it. Now there's B-Lab U.S. Canada and then B-Lab Europe, I think, or global or something like that. And I haven't gotten the full scoop on what happened there, but learned a little bit about that at the conference in Vancouver. And, yeah, it's an amazing community of companies that have to go through this assessment. And so if you compare it to the 1% for the Planet movement, there is no assessment. So I always tell people, with 1% for the Planet, it's great because it funds these environmental causes, but you could be a pretty bad actor and just donate 1% of your revenue and you could be part of 1% for the planet. And I don't think there's many of those from the community that I've seen and the people that I know and the companies that I know they're in it. But with the B Corp, there isn't really that. There is a bit of a movement right now within the B Corp community that some feel that the standards are not high enough. So for instance, I believe it was like Nestle that got in the last couple of years. And so when that happened, Dr. Bronner said, whoa, you know how much plastic comes from those coffee pods that they have? And, you know, in all of their operations, they're one of those huge conglomerates. And so there is a bit of a movement right now within the B Corp community that is sort of rebelling and asking for them to be better. And generally speaking, though, even with that included in what's going on, an amazing community, the conference is a lot of really uplifting content. I learned a lot about the unceded indigenous land in Vancouver, which is different than you're going to find in places where it's ceded, which the main difference being is in Vancouver, they took the land. There was no conversation, negotiation with the indigenous tribes and nations. They just took it and put them on boats and sent them across the harbor. Whereas in other places, I believe San Diego included, ceded land means that the tribes actually got together, talked it out, took a vote, and decided to give the land to the Westerners that came in, whether for better or for worse.
Yeah, right.
And so
hopefully without a gun to their head, right?
Yeah, I mean, you never know. Those muskets. Yeah. But I think if I had to wrap up what I kind of would say about the B Corp community and how I feel about it, it's just a tremendous community of people that are really striving to do better for people, for planet, for business, to kind of erode some of the downstream effects of capitalism that we were talking about before we jumped on the mics.
Yeah, exactly. And locally here, if you're interested in one of the collaborators for the podcast is Be Local, which is kind of the social aspect of the B Corp companies. So
I'm on the board.
Yep. They have a monthly meeting. Had one just this past week. So if you want to come and hang out with some people and have some cocktails.
Yeah. Hard kombucha. They do it at the Juneshine, I think, is the one. No, Boochcraft.
Boochcraft. Yeah.
In Del Mar.
Del Mar. Yeah. So fun place to go.
Yeah.
Fun things to do.
Yeah. Good people, too.
Another thing that you're involved in is Business for Good.
Yes.
You're very involved there, on the board there as well. So maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I'd love to. So Business for Good, local business league working towards progressive policy change in San Diego. And traditionally, we've had a few focus areas, environment, homelessness and housing, access to capital for small businesses, and immigration, and sort of that one's a little bit more difficult to push on from a local level because it is a federal issue for the most part. And so it's also a great community. I would say that most of my friends nowadays in my life are from one of these communities that we're talking about. And that,
I think, note the file. If you want to hang out with Sam,
you got to do some good.
Those are the two places.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, there's all this stuff nowadays about surround yourself with people that are aligned, and that's a great way to build that in. But Business for Good, certainly, it's all people. There's a lot of B Corps in the mix. There's some 1% for the planet businesses in the mix. And really just an organization of people that want to see change. It grew out of originally an organization called Main Street Alliance. They were a national organization, and we just didn't have the same issue areas that they had nationally here in California because we tend to be a little bit ahead of the curve. So then we created Business for Good. I think we've been around now for 8 years, something like that.
I think immigration was kind of one of the big factors right here locally because being a border city, we had a little more concern about that than I think the other guys did.
And healthcare too. You know, there was a lot of push from the national on healthcare, and it's like, well, we kind of have that here to a degree. I mean, within our system, that is what it is. And so Business for Good, yeah, we also do some social events. So we do one social event per quarter. We had one, and we try to do it in different parts of the county. So it was in South County.
It's the same time as the Be Local event.
It is, yes.
So we need to fix that one.
This week I was triple booked for the Be Local event because it was Be Local. It was also a Business for Good general meeting where we bring in, and that's a great thing to mention too, is we bring in for our general meeting someone to educate us on something locally. And so we've had the mayor, we've had people that are running for mayor, we've had heads of other nonprofit organizations. This week we had someone from Axios, the news outlet, kind of educating us on the state of media in San Diego, which was really fascinating, actually. There's been some really low points, apparently. And, you know, there's always been that conversation of the revenue cliff for media because of online and all these things. And so fascinating to hear him talk about that. And I guess I should plug that every time you hear media and like NPR ask for donations, we should donate because it ends up being a situation where all of a sudden they're just gone, right? And we say, well, you should have told us. And it's like, we ask for money every day. And that's what he was kind of preaching to us and resonated. And But yeah, so Business for Good, events like that. And then we have a big summit every year. Our third one will be this year. And that's where we bring together the community and we have panels and speakers and keynote. And we have a little party after at a all-female owned and run brewery that's next door to the venue. And really great group of people doing good work.
I think we have a date even, right?
Yeah, September 25th.
You walked in the door saying that.
Yeah, so. It's exciting.
So put that on your calendar, folks.
Yeah, I don't think we've like started advertising it yet, so don't quote me on it if we end up having to change it, but I'm pretty sure we already signed the contract, so it should be that date.
I want to shift back to legal for one moment.
Sure.
Because I forgot to ask. When you and I were speaking about doing the podcast, you were saying there was some legislation that's come through that every business owner needs to be thinking about.
Yeah.
So here's your chance to blast it out one more time, Sam, that all those guys need to be thinking about this.
Yep. So it's called the Corporate Transparency Act Beneficial Owner Information Report.
Jeez, that's a muffle.
That's a mouthful. And shockingly.
What's it going
to cost me? Yeah, right. So shockingly, the Corporate Transparency Act is an act that was passed during Trump's presidency, and it is actually designed to prevent white-collar crime. So again, shocking. And that act included in it this beneficial owner information report, which is essentially a report that has to be filed by every business that has ever been created if it is still in existence and any business that is created moving forward. So if your business was created before 2024, you have until the end of 2024 to file this. If your business was created in 2024 or beyond, you have 90 days after you form your business to file this. It is a report that basically includes your business information, your address, and then anybody that owns 5% or more. And then in addition to that, anybody that is a decision maker for the business. So that's the beneficial owner information. And it is like their address, their social, and, you know, like an identification, like ID, passport type of thing, number. So it is sensitive information that we're submitting to the federal government. So hopefully it's good. It's through their FinCEN department. And there are some pretty steep penalties if people don't file it. And so we expect that probably come end of this year, all the people that we've been hounding with emails and things like this are going to be knocking down our door.
Is this for the federal government that's doing this?
Yep. It's through the, I think it's kind of an offshoot of both the IRS and like the securities department, since it's to prevent that kind of white collar crime aspect.
So if you go online, or is there kind of a standard form that you just fill out?
Yeah, you fill it out online actually.
It's so similar to like the state thing you got to do every year as well.
Kind of like that. Yeah. So it's like a portal that you go through. I think you probably have to sign up and get like registered most of the time with those federal systems.
$25 later or whatever they charge you for that.
Yeah. I don't know if they charge you. I hope they don't charge you to get registered. And then it is free to file the report. We obviously charge for our time to file it and collect all the information. But so yeah, for us, it's like $250, I think, is what we're charging.
Public announcement.
Yeah, PSA for sure.
No extra charge for that. Well, let's talk about San Diego for a moment here, right? I mean, we live in this wonderful city, but obviously we got lots of stuff, just like any other big city has. And, you know, business needs to be part of this. I think business has a commitment. I mean, if you operate your business here, you're part of the community, you have certain expectations or needs from the community to make things happen. And often we struggle to get businesses engaged. So big question is, how do we do this, right? So we got the B Corps, we got X amount of companies that are engaged. What are your thoughts on how do we get the balance of organizations to say, yeah, I'm part of this community. I'm not just here to do my thing in my little silo, but I need to be in tune with what's going on in the whole ecosystem I'm operating in. Yeah, I mean, you're very busy in all these different organizations. What are your thoughts on them? How do we get people engaged, get them enrolled in this, create a movement to actually change our community?
Yeah, I don't think there's any easy answer, but where my mind always goes with these types of conversations is education first. If there was a way that we could help educate business owners in these different organizations on the value of being involved, because, you know, I think there's a lot of, oh, look at these people that are doing this work. And even myself sometimes, that's like when I got here and I said, your word's not mine, when you said something flattering, because there's some self-serving aspect to doing this type of work and doing these types of things. And I think that if people understood that better, they would be more motivated to do that work. Because let's just take, for example, there's been a big conversation in San Diego about bike lanes and removing parking, right? And I'm a big proponent of get rid of those parking spots and make them bike lanes, because A, I'm a cyclist, but B, it is better for our environment to reduce the amount of cars that are driving. And the argument to that typically from business owners is, well, a car can bring four people here, whereas a bike can only bring one. But the counterpoint to that is that you can park 80 bikes outside of your business, and you can't park 80 cars outside of your business without taking up a city block. And so that in and of itself, I think if people understood that and they saw the value of that, and granted, it causes a shift to more kind of hyper-local business and communities, but that's not a bad thing. That creates more cohesiveness and more connection between people. And all of these things, in my mind, are positives, right? So not only do we reduce pollution and reduce cars driving on the streets, which are dangerous, and, you know, umpteen studies show that, to pedestrians, to everything, and then we increase patronage to that business, presumably with the ability to have people walk and bike, you know, the benefits outweigh the downsides. And that's just one issue. If we're talking homelessness, it's a similar conversation, because if businesses were to get involved and push for change and support things like the mega shelter that everyone is up in arms about here and support the Barracks safe parking zone that's going to be in Point Loma, which I live in Point Loma and I see all the signs that are totally against that.
Not in my neighborhood.
Yep.
It's a good idea, just not here.
Right? Yeah, just not here. And then, you know, the next neighborhood says not here. And with that many NIMBYs, it never happens.
Now we're in Yuma or something.
Yeah, right.
No, not in Yuma. Keep on going.
Right. And so that's the challenge, right, is I think if businesses and people locally understood better that these shelters, if done properly and with wraparound services as well, they're not going to hurt your property value. They're not going to create chaos in your neighborhood. And if anything, if you have a business in town that's affected by homelessness, it would probably reduce that impact on your business because these people have somewhere to go, get their feet on the ground, and then go do something. Live, you know, permanently in a permanent housing, get a job, the whole thing, get help, whatever it is they need. So if businesses understood that, if we were able to educate them in some effective way, because that's the difficulty. That's why I say
I was going to say, you know, that education is the key, but how do we educate? Because obviously that's where we're falling short there.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's why the Business for Good Summit exists, partially. I think that, and, you know, to your point, like, I'm busy. It's hard to make it to all of these things. And so I think that is an aspect of it, is that we really have to figure out a way to get it into business owners and organization heads' head that this is worth your time. Go to these things, learn about these things. And I'd be lying if I said that this was all just, you know, the way I've been forever. A lot of this is stuff that I've learned through going to Business for Good meetings and learning from the guest speakers that we have and spending that time investing in what don't I know and how can I help others. And then that helps me.
Well, it's like, you know, you and I were talking before the podcast started. We were just kind of talking about the evolution of capitalism, whatever. That, you know, my early career, I had an engineering job, and I was automating things, right? And I remember, you know, the superintendent in my area, oh, we're going to lay everybody off. No one's going to have jobs. I'm like, no. You know, be more productive, and we're going to create more jobs. And we're just going to move people from here to here while we're automating this thing. And then a few years later, next thing you know, we're doing a maquilador. Now we're offshoring everything, right? And I mean, Sam, this was like 40 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So I was at the front end of this thing, and I'm like, this is all good, right? It's all justified. Now you look at it, and everybody's like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe there's something a little wrong with this program.
Yeah, hindsight's 2020, right? I wish foresight was 2020, but certainly isn't.
But it is a challenge to educate people. You know, as you know, my wife's in the homeless space, and I get in conversation with people, and I hear very basic comments, you know, oh, everyone's on alcohol, everyone's this, everyone came from somewhere else. That's not the truth, right? We get into the statistics, that it doesn't look like that.
Right. And it's reductive, too, because you're taking humanhood away from these people by reducing them to a drug addict or mentally unstable or whatever it is. And the fact is that I think it's almost a majority now of our homeless population that are veterans. And so if you want to look at it that way and you want to reduce them to a statistic in that way, these are people that fought for our country, for us to have this beautiful city and this life that we get to have. And so I think it is, and touching on that, you know, the otherness is just a problem with humans, but specific to homelessness, you know, they're others to us. They're not humans. They're not neighbors. They're not, you know, our friend, our brother, our sister, our mother, our customer. They're just this segment of the world that we don't think of as human. And that doesn't motivate us to do anything about it, learn anything about it, or be better about it. And it's a shame, because the way I think about it is, you know, I'm a paycheck away from being on the street.
And as so many people.
Totally. Yeah. And like, and I went to whatever, 18 years of school, right? I've got degrees, but like, I could end up on the street with one medical thing or one car accident. You know, we're talking about, I rode a motorcycle.
Number one here. Reason for bankruptcy is medical.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we have GoFundMe, you know, like paying for most people's medical bills these days. Yeah. And so it is not far-fetched to think that any one of us could end up on the street. And then we are one of those people. And the idea that these people don't want help, and granted, you know, there's always going to be a segment of anything that is the thing that people reduce it to. And there are a very small minority, I would say, within the homeless population that are probably not interested in help. But that doesn't mean that if they received it, they wouldn't change that tune. Because these are still humans that I would imagine don't prefer to live on the street.
Right. Yeah, it's just easy to put them all in one box. It's one thing I always say, too, is that some level there's some validation, because what we see when we think of homeless is the person that's on the corner that's maybe psychotic and the alcoholic or drug addict or whatever. That's just like the tip of the iceberg. That's the visual part. There's this whole other huge crowd of folks. You know, the number one group falling into homelessness are actually seniors. So people that have worked their whole career, they don't have the bank, and then something goes wrong, health, this, that, or the other. And all of a sudden, to your point, oops.
Yep.
So here you are, maybe 70-some years old. You didn't come from somewhere else. You've worked your whole life, and now you're finding yourself in this situation.
Right. There's two other things I want to say on this, because they're super important, and I always see people's eyes get wide when I say these things. One is that we don't typically talk about or think about how much of our tax dollars go to the medical bills of people that are on the street, because they don't have insurance. There isn't some magical fund that pays for this. And there's a bunch of studies out there that show if someone ends up housed and starts taking care of themselves, the amount of tax dollars that have to go towards helping is dramatically reduced.
Yes.
I used to remember the statistics, but it was a crazy number, like over 100,000 or something like that a year per person.
Per person, yeah.
Versus dramatically less than that if they are given services and help and they become healthier and have a roof over their head, which that's another thing is statistics show very, very emphatically that if you put a roof over someone's head and you give them services, wraparound services to help, and that's things like mental health services, job coaching, you know, all the things, that it's something like 91% of people stay housed. And I've said that statistic to people before. I remember I was at someone's birthday in Mexico last year, and my friend was like, you know, I'm not questioning that. No, I am questioning that statistic. And then that night, I remember I'm laying in bed in my hotel room trying to find the study. And then the next day, I was like, so it's 91%. And then even 82%. And I was like giving them all the statistics. But that's real. And so there's that one. But then the other one that I think is important to highlight is that cars. You're going to get a theme here from me that I kind of rally against cars, but
you and your electric motorcycle.
Yep. Well, and I haven't had a car since 2017 either. So, you know, I can throw stones, but the fact of the matter is that statistically speaking, cars actually make more people homeless than many other factors, because people will prioritize getting a car that's reliable with a car payment so that they can get to their job so that they don't become homeless, but then they can't pay their other bills because they have this car lease. And so the car actually is what sometimes puts people on the street. And that highlights a whole other segment of homelessness that people don't think about, which is the people that don't have a home. They're also not in a tent on the street. They're in a car.
Yeah, that's a big part of the population.
Yep. And so that's why you hear about these safe parking sites, which are great. I mean, it's a step in the right direction. But it's really important to highlight that, you know, this car culture is one of the things that can contribute to homelessness. And going back to what we're talking about, if more people understood how much of their tax dollars go to this and how much it impacts them individually, financially, as a taxpayer, I think they'd be more willing to help with housing and homelessness.
It's a crazy vicious circle, right? Because all that money is going to try and put a Band-Aid on the back end, which is clearly not working. We can't keep up with the problem. So you really say, well, what if we take some of that money that we're spending over here, actually got put in the front end, right, where we had better infrastructure, better society, whatever, right?
Right.
Yeah, so somehow it's gotten lost and it becomes a pretty tough swirl to get out of.
Yeah, well, we take a cue from the healthcare system, you know, treat the symptoms, not the cause.
There you go. There you go. That's one of my big complaints. What's our vision? We have no vision. We're just chasing problems around. What's our vision for Sandy? What do we want Sandy to look like 5 years from now?
Yeah, we just got an audit, I think, from the state or maybe the federal government about our spending on homelessness here in San Diego. I guess they audited San Jose and San Diego, and they came back to San Diego and they said, you're doing an awfully terrible job of actually centralizing all of your spending reports so that people can see what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess the city
we failed the audit, apparently.
Totally. And I guess the city was like, you're right. But it highlights another thing that we talked about in preparing for this podcast, which is that coordination of all these public and private partnership services that are offered in San Diego. I could rattle off a dozen different, like, food, shelter, different products for people that are on the street that all sometimes work together. And that dozen that I can rattle off is probably only a small fraction of the overall number of nonprofits and private businesses that impact this situation. And if we were to coordinate all of them, that would create such a better impact, both upstream, like you're saying, and downstream on the symptoms. And I think the audit showing that the city can't even get all of their spending in one place is just a microcosm of the fact that not any of it is all centralized and coordinated.
It's like our military. I feel like we haven't been able to pass an audit or a budget or whatever thing with the military for like 8 years. We've spent like $1 trillion a year.
And they get the most money. Yeah.
We have no idea where it's going.
Exactly.
That's a bit of a problem, I think.
Yeah.
All right, Sam, we're going to make our right-hand turn or U-turn here.
Sure.
San Diego, the community, business. What are you optimistic about? Where are we going? Let's paint a different picture.
Sure.
What gets you excited about where we're going here as a community?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that pops into my mind right off the bat is the Port Authority actually here in San Diego is currently undergoing a process to electrify all of their boats and vehicles. And so I think that's a really cool aspect that I was kind of surprised to learn about a year or two ago. And I think that type of thing, you know, we're seeing more buses that are electric. I think they're talking about making the city take that same step. And so those types of things are really exciting. I think we got to see more charging infrastructure, but that's an exciting change. I think that the bike lane conversation, as fraught as it is with both sides of that issue and people pushing back, I see progress around town when I'm riding my bike around. And I think those are really positive. And, you know, I talk a lot about housing and homelessness, and I talk a lot about it in a critical way. But I do think that we're a few years into Todd Gloria's mayor time, and I think he is starting to actually do some of the things that we've been expecting him and hoping he would do. You know, the big shelter being one of them, and some of these other things that they've done where they're trying to buy hotels and turn them into temporary or permanent housing. I'm pretty optimistic about that. And just that the conversation with the mayor's office is empathetic and is proactive versus when I've worked with city officials and county officials in the past through Business for Good, sitting down with them and just hearing no empathy and that otherness sort of seeping into the conversation. And I'll never forget a meeting we had with a staffer for the County Board of Supervisors. This would have been back before the pandemic, but we're sitting in this gaudy conference room, huge table, and there's these like AAA bond ratings on the wall for the county. And essentially saying that they manage their money and are so conservative with their money that they have a AAA rating. And I remember asking them, you know, one of your purviews is health and human services, which obviously applies to the homelessness epidemic that we're seeing in our region. Why don't you do more? And the guy literally pointed over his shoulder at the AAA bonds and was like, well, we have a AAA bond rating because of how good we are with our money. And it was like, that was not the question.
Yeah, what's the result?
Yeah, and like, I don't give a shit if you have $1.2 billion surplus. Why? That's money that could literally be used right now to help people. And luckily, our County Board of Supervisors has kind of shifted more blue in the last few years, and I think they're doing a little bit more. But that's just, you know, I ended up being critical again. But,
well, so easy to go down that hole.
Yeah, but I guess I ended it on the fact that the County Board of Supervisors' demographics have changed a little bit, and I think they're doing better now. And so probably not a AAA bond rating, but for a good reason.
All right, Sam, kind of coming in the old end of the podcast here. What's the big idea you want to share with folks? What memorable thing you would like them to walk away with?
Yeah, I mean, I've got my People Over Profit sweater on, and I think it's a riff off of that because really, to me, what I've learned through my different chapters and iterations throughout my career and my life is that the better you are to people and just the more authentic you are to yourself and to others, the more that that sort of fosters that in return. And I think it's one of those things where, I don't know, if you think about when people laugh, right? Like laughter can be contagious. And I think that there's something to be said for positivity and authenticity and just treating people well, that that is also contagious. And I see it, you know, on a small scale with my staff and my business and my clients, where if I can really show up in that way and be a positive reinforcement and encourage my clients and my staff to reframe their perspective sometimes on things they're upset about or that are negative and try to look at it through a more positive light, that spreads because then they have that perspective and then they share that perspective and then that kind of ripples out. And it's funny, the event that I was at last night, I'll give the organization a plug, the Reality Changers organization, which I met a kid last night that had been in it since eighth grade. So eighth grade all the way up through college, it helps them fund their school. It helps coach them and academic mentoring and tutoring. And the event was called Ripple because of the ripples that their organization and those kids have. And, you know, one of the kids to this point, he went through the programs. Then he went off to college and was receiving assistance while he was in college from Reality Changers and now is a staff member of Reality Changers and is there to help these future generations of kids do the same thing. And there's no better testament for what you're doing than when someone comes back and is a part of your program after they went through it. But it just goes to show that that ripple that he created, that they created in him, that he now creates in other kids, and hopefully they create in other people, it's contagious. And so I guess I would say the big idea is just if you're ever in that moment of you're pissed off or you're angry at that email that someone sent you and you want to send one back that's just going to eviscerate them or whatever. And don't get me wrong, like, I don't want to sit over here and act like I'm this Buddhist that has this ever-present sense of calm. Like, I have those moments, but I've tried to train myself to take a step back, take a breath, and think about the outcome of how I interact, because you can always choose to meet that negativity with positivity. And if you do, I think that it can help to reshape their negativity. And also, it's definitely going to do wonders for you to not get into that negative headspace.
Sam, good stuff.
Thank
good
you. Stuff.
You are definitely out here fully integrated. You are a lawyer, a human, trying to do the right thing. People over profit. You got it all integrated together. You're playing the game full tilt, all in, everywhere you go. And you're in lots of places. And we really appreciate you, man, because we need more people like you out here trying to create the community we all truly want to live in. So
yeah.
Continue to wave the flag and make that happen, brother.
Well, thank you. I have a lot of respect for what you're doing and getting the word out about people that are doing good things through this podcast. And I'm honored to be on it and appreciate the conversation. It's always a good one with you.
Well, that's awesome. Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.